Okay, here we go. Week two of the High School Football Podcast. I'm here with Bryce Cherry, the Waco Tribune Herald sports editor. I'm Chad Conine. So we've got 2 weeks, and we've got trends instead of just one game to look at with a lot of schools. And that's always an interesting time. And of course, that'll build and build and build throughout the season. But before we get into, you know, who's doing what, I thought, you know, there are some names out there that I saw on Saturday, just some really good high school football names. And, you know, sometimes a name, you can just hear it ringing out over the airwaves from the hometown announcer on the AM radio is talking about a kid and saying his name over and over on the air. Now, I set you up and I gave you these ahead of time, so you got to have three good names for me for your all-name team.
Yeah, well, first of all, absolutely. When you're when you're a parent and you're having a kid, especially if you're a father, like one of the first things that you absolutely do is you start thinking about, all right, how will this sound through an announcer's voice?
Right.
So, you know, when I was playing with names for a future son back before I had a son, he's 14 now, but I was like, you know, playing with different names. I was like, Cooper Cherry, you know, and so I was like, yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Right.
So absolutely.
Did you do that with the radio broadcast, though, or the stadium announcer?
I think it was probably more of the PA announcer.
Okay, yeah, okay.
But either way works.
Right.
And yeah, I'm big on interesting and fun names. You mentioned it could be either from the past or recent. So one that has always stuck with me, and to me this is kind of a more basketball name, although this kid was really good in football too. We used to cover Milford, and they had a kid 1 year named Swish Washington. And I was like, that is the perfect basketball name. Are you kidding? Swish?
Right,
you know?
Right.
But it kind of works on the football field too. You can swish, you know, down the field or whatever. Marlon, you'll remember this kid, used to have a running back named Tank Smith. And he was kind of built like a tank, you know. He was sort of short and squatty, and you know, he was fun.
Did he ever arrive at 2-a-days in a tank?
Not that I recall.
Okay.
No. Okay.
That's what DeMarcus Lawrence, Tank Lawrence, did for the Cowboys last year.
And then currently it's hard to top Javion Sunday. We've sort of
the puns write
run
themselves.
Every joke, you know, to the ground now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just fun. Sunday, Friday, you know, it's all good. Sunday's coming.
Right.
And then let me give an honorable mention. This guy was not a guy I covered in high school football. But back in my previous newspaper incarnation, which was a long time ago in Brenham, I would cover Blinn College football. Mm-hmm. And they once played Navarro. And Navarro had a guy on their team that year named Masculine Walker. That name stuck with me forever. And I think I wrote a name column once and I said that, that name is certainly a lot better than Effeminate Prancer. I just always remembered Masculine Walker. I mean, that's a great name.
Was his nickname Strut?
I don't know, but yep. I love that name.
Well, there's a receiver out there, and I think he's from Wortham named Stash Stewart. Caught a touchdown pass this week, and I just thought that's, you know, I could hear that one, you know. Quarterback drops back and he hits Stash Stewart in the end zone for a touchdown.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the other one that I can kind of hear is Nathan Quattlebaum over right tackle, 3 yards for Quattlebaum. You know, the Quattlebaum at the 10, the 5 touchdown Quattlebaum.
Are we pronouncing that right? That's the question.
I don't care.
It's, Nathan Quattlebaum has had a heck of a year thus far.
How else would you pronounce it? Quattlebaum? Quattlebaum?
Quattle? I don't
Quattlebaum?
Know. Quattlebaum?
Hopefully somebody from Bruce Valetti will call us and let us know.
Yes. Yeah. Pronounce Quattlebaum for us. So.
Okay. Moving right along. On Saturday morning, our good friend David G. Campbell, who used to cover games for us and He worked, what, part-time, full-time, mm-hmm. and then part-time at the Trib?
Many years.
Fantastic high school sports guy. He emailed me letting know that by his calculation, Wortham scored two more points in its 70-66 victory over Dallas First Baptist than it did in all of 2018. I checked, and I came up with the same numbers. Bryce, Wortham's quarterback, Brandon Coker, scored 6 touchdowns and 7 two-point conversions. Man. Is that a record? Have you ever heard of that many two-point conversions?
So, I hadn't heard of anything like that. Now, this did sort of set me off on a little path of research.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Yeah, and so it seems to be the highest scoring game by an individual in Central Texas mm-hmm. that I've come across. I think it's tied for 10th in the state if you go by Texas football's record book.
Right.
The record for most points in a game, in a single game, is 75 by a guy named Jiggs Ray, which he could make the all-name team mm-hmm, for sure. Mm-hmm. Jiggs Ray from Pilot Point in 1937. Talk about a record holding up. I mean, first of all, 75 points is just ridiculous.
Right.
I mean, this Coker kid scored 50. I mean, and that just boggles the mind. So mm-hmm. 75, I mean, it's just bananas. But and then... So this I had stumbled across the other day, and then in sort of researching this question for the podcast, I went back, and it took me a while to find wherever the heck I had found it. But in six-man, the record is 72 points. It's by a guy named Tony Diaz at Paint Rock. But the Central Texas record is... 11 touchdowns in a game, so that would be, what, 66 points?
Right.
This guy from Bynum named Jamie Frazier rushed for 11 touchdowns in 1986 versus Blum.
Well, and you got to think he probably had some conversions in there too, right?
Well, so it didn't list those. You had to wonder about that. And the fact that he didn't pass Tony Diaz from Paint Rock leads me to believe that maybe he didn't have a ton of conversions, but... but yeah, he had at least 66 points, which is pretty incredible.
Well, I think I'm going to do a notebook item on this.
Yeah.
And part of me wants to call Dallas Baptist and be like, hey, I'm just wondering, after he scored like his fourth two-point conversion, didn't you have a pretty good feeling who was going to be trying to run that two-point try in there?
Maybe he was just unstoppable. Maybe he was in the zone.
Could have been. Maybe they, I don't know.
I mean, give it up for Wortham, because clearly they're a lot better than they've been in a while.
Yeah. Yep. Looking forward to seeing how they continue. So on my Sunday Rewind this week, I wrote about Central Texas' best 2-0, 1-1, and 0-2 teams. And more than anything, it was kind of a look at schools that schedule tough games and perform well in them. I think most coaches would say they want to schedule the best opponents they can to help them get ready and find out where their weaknesses are and get better. But is it possible to schedule too tough?
I think it is possible. You know, if I were a coach, the schedule-making process would completely depend on what kind of team I had.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it all boils down to.
Right.
If you're a Martyr of La Vega, you know, you can schedule a little tougher. If you have a veteran team that you think, you know, can handle adversity, or, you know, you have a team that you think is going to contend for a state championship, you want to test those guys.
Right.
I mean, against really tough competition.
Right.
Maybe you mix in a winnable game in there. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think you don't – I mean, you want to challenge your team.
Right.
And the whole thing is they always talk about getting ready for district. I mean, so if you play tougher teams than you may even see in district, it's almost like a relief in a sense when you get to district play.
Yeah. You know, and then you have kind of a wild card factor, too, because if you're scheduling that because you have a good team, you know, let's say you have 25 seniors the first year of a realignment cycle, then all of a sudden the next year you're going and playing at somebody that you scheduled because they were pretty tough, and all of a sudden you got a young team. So mm-hmm. we're seeing some of those wild card matchups in a way.
Yeah, and I think the flip side is if you have a younger team or a team that has – really been on hard times for a while. Mm-hmm. I think you have to schedule some games that are on the other end, you know, that are winnable. And I think we've seen what winning a few games can do for a program like University.
Right.
You know, last year they had the big breakthrough against Austin Travis, end up winning two more games that year, 3-7. A lot of schools would look at that as a really down year. For University, it was progress.
Mm-hmm.
And now look at them, they're 2-0.
Yeah, yeah. One that I think that maybe wishes they could have redone the schedule for this year. And, you know, no disrespect to anybody, but I think, you know, Whitney's played Gerald and Marlin so far and whipped up on them pretty good. And I think Whitney might be, you know, better, hungry for something, you know, because those are both schools that are smaller than them, I believe, or at least Marlin is, I know.
Yeah.
So, better stop there.
Don't get yourself in trouble with the Whitney
exactly,
folks.
Right. Well, speaking of taking on tough opponents, and you mentioned Martin La Vega, they both lost on Friday. La Vega got beat at home by Argyle, and Mart got beat at home against Holland.
Mm-hmm.
La Vega's opponent, Argyle, was ranked number 3 in their same division. Holland was unranked. I haven't seen the poll yet this week. I'm guessing they got in there. But were you surprised by either of those games?
Yes, I was surprised. But I also think that it's no need to, you know, sound the panic alarm for mm-hmm. either Mart or La Vega. You know, it's a long season. I mean, especially if you're a Mart or La Vega and you're hoping to play in
12,
December.
13 weeks at least. Well, 16 weeks, let's be honest. Yeah.
I mean, those teams have legitimate December mm-hmm. aspirations.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't overreact to an early September game.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, Mart loses to Franklin 21-0. And,
mm-hmm.
and we, you know, we probably sat here at this same time last year and thought, you know, is Mart as good as, you know, they were the year before?
Right.
Or, you know, the tendency is to overreact sometimes to one result. And the fact was, Franklin was a good team. Mart had a little off night. And they never lost again the rest of the season. You know, I think Mart's going to be just fine. They are, you know, younger at a lot of places than they've been.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that there may be some more growing pains, you know, with this team. But I think they're going to be a team that plays a while. Same thing for La Vega. You know, La Vega last year lost to Argyle in the regular season. Now, it was a closer game. I think it was a 2-point game. But ended up beating Argyle in the playoffs when it really mattered, mm-hmm. you know, and ended up going on to win state. So I think these games are great for these teams because, you know, it gets those guys' attention. It, you know, it's stuff to work on. I mean, those coaches probably eat that stuff up.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned La Vega, and you, when you think about that game, their offense almost, you know, got them back in. And you know, if they'd have come back and won that game, it'd have been probably one of the all-time, you know, greats.
Mm-hmm.
It was set up, you know, we talked about it last week, you know, top three matchup. So it's real intriguing, though, looking down the schedule, you know, at who La Vega plays. And if they continue to get better and other teams like China Spring continue to get better, you know, the kind of games we're likely to see even in the regular season before the playoffs get here.
Yeah, no doubt.
So let's drop down in classification. We both slipped under 500 in week 2, picking 6-man games. Has that happened very often that you were under 500? I don't know. I know it's that we don't necessarily always divide it that way and look at it like that, but
well, and the question is, you know, why? Why were we, you know, so bad this week in 6-man games? And I think the answer is pretty simple. I think some teams are just better than we thought they were.
Right.
I think that's fair. And I think as the season progresses, when you're picking games, usually you get more and more of a handle on a team's identity.
Right.
And who's good and who's not as good. And, you know, who exceeded preseason expectations and who
mm-hmm.
didn't live up to those.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some teams that, you know, have certainly looked better than we thought. Methodist Home, who we talked about last week on the podcast,
But we at least all got that one right.
Well, right. Yeah. But I'm kind of thinking back two weeks ago when they beat Gordon. This week, so Bynum beat Walnut Springs, which I didn't see that one coming. And I have a pretty good handle, I feel like, on this local six-man scene. I've followed it a long time. But Bynum has been down for a while. They actually have the longest playoff drought in our area now that Bruce Valetti broke theirs a couple years ago. And that first week, they had a game, and I can't remember who they were playing that first week, but had a game where the power went out, and they weren't able to finish.
They didn't finish that game.
So you didn't. They're coming essentially fresh into week two, with essentially playing their opener against Walnut Springs, and that was a result I didn't see coming. Another one was Jonesboro over Blum. Jonesboro clearly is a team that has had a lot of tradition, of course, made back-to-back state championship game appearances a couple years ago. But a lot of those guys are gone. They've sort of been rebuilding. Blum is one of our better teams.
Yeah, they're ranked really high.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of these games were ones that the sixmanfootball.com type people also got wrong. So,
right.
A couple others I'll mention is just, Penelope beat Morgan. I got that one wrong. That one, I kind of kick myself because Penelope actually beat Morgan last year. Penelope's been the same team the last 4 years or so, where they'll pretty much dominate their non-district schedule, and then they get into district and they struggle.
They're playing
Coolidge and these other teams that they just – but they schedule such that they can win in non-district.
Yeah.
Bluffdale, whoever that is, beat Cop Earl, and Cop Earl was a team who made the playoffs in let's just face it, a pretty bad six-man district last year. It was only Cop Earl's second playoff trip ever. Now they have some kids back from that team, so that was a game that everybody kind of picked Cop Earl to win. I don't think any of us knew anything about Bluffdale.
I just lean on the sixmanfootball.com ranking so hard.
Then another game that maybe we should have seen coming a little bit, but it was kind of hard. A lot of these teams we don't have as much information on,
right?
But Live Oak lost to Parkview, and it's just, I mean, I talked to Bryce Helton before the year. They have a really, really young team at Live Oak. We've gotten so accustomed to that program.
To them being really good.
Being one of the best in private six-man.
And we missed them both weeks, I think. We picked them to beat Vanguard. And then none of us got Eagle Christian winning their first game.
Yeah, and that's another one where when you're a team that's just starting out, there's not a lot for us to go on in terms of predicting and what they're going to do.
Right.
That said, in talking with Bryce Frazier, who, is former Parkview coach, starting that program now at Eagle Christian, he told me several times before the season, and you did a story on them too,
right,
where he was like, man, Bryce, I'm not kidding. We've got some players.
Yeah.
We're going to surprise some people. And he was clearly excited about what they had.
Yeah, that Jonah Williams has made plays for them both weeks. So.
Yeah.
All right, well, one more surprise question for you. And speaking of picking games, I now have an 8-game lead on you, Bryce, going after 2 weeks. And that might not sound like much, but I don't know, another good week when I get maybe a couple of games on you, and it's starting to look like an insurmountable lead. Do you have a strategy for catching up with me?
Oh, the trash talking has begun early. First of all, it is a long season.
Right.
I feel like I can make up an 8-game lead, given that we pick like 50 a week.
Right.
Now, right. I'm not worried. You just got to chip away. I was a little disgusted that I wrote down the games last Friday that you and I had differently, and I was following those games with interest, and I was not doing very well in those games, and to me they were toss up games, and every one of them was going your way. So your luck will run out, buddy.
I'm just going to say I wasn't surprised by that at all.